Hi everyone, and welcome to The Love Code. Thank you for joining me for another opportunity to be uplifted, inspired, transformed, healed, reconnected with your soul. Those are all the reasons why I wanted to create this program. It's an opportunity to really connect back in, be reminded about who we are, and hopefully provide you with some upliftment that will carry you all the way through the week until our next Love Code show. So thanks again for being here with me. If you are listening, I always am so grateful for people who may be listening for the very first time. So welcome. If you'd like to get these shows every week, then you can access the archive shows in two really easy ways. You can go to my website, which is drcherylselman.com. Opt in there, and they get sent to you every week to your inbox, or you can go over to my Facebook page, which is What Women Must Know. That's What Women Must Know, and they get posted there. So the reason why my Facebook is called What Women Must Know is because my original show on Progressive Radio Network, which is every Thursday at 4 p.m. Eastern Time, is called What Women Must Know. And that show is all about creating optimal health, physically, emotionally, mentally, spiritually as well. So it's more focused on the facet of the many facets of health and well-being and rejuvenation. So if you opt in either to Dr. Cheryl Selman or to What Women Must Know, then you will be able to access both of those podcasts. And I hope you do that, because every week I have such fascinating conversations with amazing guests that will absolutely help to expand your horizons and get you more intelligent as well. Always good getting more information. So we're going to get more intelligent today, because I have a really special guest here with me on the Love Code today. And we're going to be exploring energy healing. We're going to be talking about some of the basic truths and tenets of Ayurvedic medicine and traditional Chinese medicine, all topics that really inspire me. And my guest today is Jonathan Glass. So here's a little bit about Jonathan. He is an author and co-creator of the Total Life Cleanse and Jeev Atma Energy Healing. He is a master acupuncturist, Ayurvedic practitioner, herbalist, and natural health educator. Jonathan served on the faculty of the New England School of Acupuncture and the Dharma Institute of Yoga and Ayurveda. He has facilitated thousands through his individual and group-supported transformational cleanse and Jeev Atman energy healing programs for over 20 years. Jonathan has been in private practice since 1987, when he co-founded the Healing Essence Center with his wife, Catherine, in Concord, Massachusetts, and he is the author of the Total Life Cleanse program. So it is my great pleasure to welcome Jonathan to the show, and so happy to have you here, Jonathan.
Thank you so much, Dr. Cheryl. It's such a gift to be here, and I love the name of your show.
Oh, well, thank you. Yeah, you know, it's a one-year anniversary since I decided to take on the project of a second program, and the reason I did that was because I was spending time with a very special spiritual teacher who is called Master Sha, Jigong Sha. I don't know if you ever heard of Master Sha, but I was attending some of the workshops. He was a guest on my show, and then I followed up. He invited me to attend some of his retreats, and it was such an honor to be with him in his presence. I wanted to do something that really supported his work and message. So that's how it all came about.
Beautiful.
And, you know, it's such a pleasure to do these shows because, as I said in the intro, wow, I just get to have the best conversations and meet the most wonderful people and have one-to-one opportunities that I probably would never have been able to do otherwise. So
wonderful.
It's great. Yeah, I get to learn.
It is great. It's wonderful. Wonderful work that you're doing and wonderful opportunity.
And it's great to have you on. You know, we have to tell our audience that I actually met you. I have no idea how many years ago it was, Jonathan, that we first met. It's probably longer than I think it is. But it was quite a ways
back,
right?
At least 15, 20 years probably.
Oh, my God, no, not really, was it?
I think so.
Oh, well. Well, anyway, I remember it so distinctly, going to your center and the beautiful energy there, and just having a chance to meet you, and it was just a beautiful healing experience. So it feels like it was just yesterday, to be totally honest, Jonathan.
I know
your work has just grown and expanded, and you have this wonderful book, and getting out there and teaching. I know you've just finished teaching at Kripalu, which is a pretty amazing place, which I've been to. I'm so glad you have time with us today. So we're going to delve in, and we're going to explore through Ayurveda and maybe through traditional Chinese medicine and what you've been researching, some of the key things that in our modern culture we have forgotten about, or maybe we never learned in the first place, but the ancient wisdoms from India and China really bring us back in touch with the true principles of health and well-being that we need to return to. And that's what I want us to talk about today, because I think that they're really important to help us get healthy. And I know that's your passion and what you're doing. So,
absolutely.
Why don't we start? Can you just briefly tell us how you found your path to Ayurveda medicine, Ayurvedic medicine, and traditional Chinese medicine?
Sure. So, as a infant, I had the experience of having really bad pneumonia twice. It was during a time when a lot of mothers weren't breastfeeding, because it was, you know, they were being told that formula was better and breast milk wasn't sufficient, that type of thing. So my mom was one of those people that believed that, and that was just the culture at the time. But I was highly sensitive to dairy, so I literally almost died twice due to pneumonia and hugely allergic reactions. So that was early in life. And then it seemed that one fine day they said I was no longer sensitive to dairy, allergic to dairy, and I drank milk the rest up until I was about 18 years old with horrendous, horrendous allergies, all kinds of shots and drugs and pills and antibiotics, you know, 2-3 times a year, up until I was about 18 years old, when I picked up the book Back to Eden by Jethro Kloss. Looked at allergies, and it said stop the dairy and, you know, change your diet. So I cleaned up my diet as best as I could, living at the soccer fraternity in college. So basically, I was eating iceberg lettuce, peanut butter and jelly sandwiches, and no more milk. And I felt 1,000 times better. And but what was interesting, in between that time, I also discovered meditation. And our beloved friend, Ram Dass, who just passed away, many people know Ram Dass. He just passed away, I think it was last week or the week before. But I picked up his book, Be Here Now, and I was at summer camp with a friend of mine, and we learned how to meditate. And I found that meditation made a huge difference in a lot of areas in terms of how I felt about myself and communication. But I was really into soccer and hockey and athletics at the time, and it really helped me with my athletics. It just kind of I was able to get into the zone much more effectively. So pretty early on, I recognized two things. One, that diet made a difference, and that meditation and yoga. So when I was in college, I was doing quite a bit of yoga and quite a bit of meditation, and started learning and playing around with diet. So I sort of was joking, but that's what I ate in the beginning. But then I started looking into diet and eating a lot more plants and cleaner and healthier, and one thing led to another. And then I found myself in India, and I lived in an ashram for a little while, about 4 years, and got into Ayurveda at the time, and studied, and read as much as I could, and came back to America and studied massage and herbs and nutrition. And at that point, Ayurveda wasn't so popular in America, And I was also getting acupuncture, and I just sort of thought from a practical perspective, I was really interested in chiropractic acupuncture and Ayurveda, and I thought, well, I'll get the license in Chinese medicine, and then I can go on and continue my studies in Ayurveda. So that's what I've done since then. So that's pretty much how it began.
Interesting how our path winds us through our lives. What ashram were you in for 4 years? That's a long time to be living in India.
Yeah, it was in a it was mostly in, some was in Calcutta, some in Kathmandu, and some in Mumbai. And it was a bhakti yoga ashram. It's a Vaishnav tradition. It's a bhakti yoga tradition.
Yeah, amazing time, right? Yeah, I don't know whether you knew this, but I actually lived 2 years in India myself.
So, oh, did you really?
I was living in South India. It was an amazing experience. I've never been back, but I would love to. I'd love to go back sometime. It's on my list.
Yeah.
One of my things to do on my bucket list.
good.
See what it's like. I mean, that was when was I there? In the 70s or so? So it was a very different world.
Yeah.
Very different.
Yeah. Well, I think Southern India still has the flair. I mean, there's still beautiful parts of India, obviously, even in the north. But the cities are pretty intense these days with pollution. But hopefully that will change in time.
Don't hold your breath.
You kind of have to hold your breath.
You have to go. So what is it that you have found based on really being steeped in these ancient traditions? I always find it so fascinating to learn from the wisdom of these ancient traditions who had access wherever they learned it. Maybe you have some insight into where they were taught such profound understanding of the body and how it works and how to bring it back into harmony.
That's such a great question, and it's, you know, in this scientific age, which I love, I love science. I'm not hugely into research. I mean, I'm not the person to go to if someone wanted to look at, you know, where's the research on this, that, and whatever. I love it when science validates the ancient wisdom. And there's never been anything in Western science that has proven, that I've seen, that has proven anything in Chinese medicine or Ayurveda to be completely incorrect. I've never seen it. I just haven't. And the things that I've always wondered about, or I have over time have wondered about, I've figured out what the issue was. You know, it's the modern wheat, it's the modern dairy, it's different things that you could argue that, well, why would they say that this was beneficial when it can be, these days can be so harmful for so many people. So that's been really interesting. So in that way, I love to see how science fits into everything. But in Ayurveda, in yoga, it's one of the aspects of it is that we can direct our intention internally. There's a whole description in Ayurveda of what we're kind of like the elements of what a human being is made up of. And one of them is something called buddhi. And buddhi means innate intelligence. And it's not just a cute idea that we can connect, we have intuition, or, you know, we're, you know, if we're really special, we can tune into things. It really means that we all have the capacity, we all have it in us already. We're wired for wisdom. We're wired for innate intelligence, and we're wired to get insights. And when we direct there's something called the five pranas, and one of those pranas means energy, and one of the directions of those pranas is inward. And I believe that the ancient mystics and yogis and healers and doctors and Ayurvedic masters and the Chinese sages and the Qigong masters and the Tai Chi masters and the yogis, they all became very, very expert at directing their intelligence, their attention inward. And they didn't have the technology that we have now. They just didn't. But they had a different type of technology, and they directed it inward, and they got information. And it turns out that that information is extraordinary. And like I said, it's uncanny, but it's maybe not 100%. Maybe it is 100% accurate. And here's a little example. You know, in Chinese medicine, they relate everything to nature. So when somebody has bronchitis-like symptoms, so yellow phlegm in the lungs, they would call that damp heat in the lungs. So now they didn't have, in Western medicine, we call that a bacterial infection or bronchitis. So the herbs that are used for damp heat in the lungs get rid of damp heat in the lungs. But when we study those herbs now, they have antibacterial properties to them. But The ancient Chinese didn't know about bacteria. They didn't think about bacteria. They thought about damp heat in the lungs. So that's just, they had a different vision. They got the same results and oftentimes better results with the use of their herbs and technologies. But they came at it from another angle, from an inner angle and a nature-based angle, rather than a technological science-based angle. And again, there's nothing wrong with science, because science is also amazing, especially when you start combining the two. When you combine science with wisdom and innate intelligence, it can be an amazing, you know, an amazing thing. So that's kind of how I see it, that when these guys, I mean, what did they do? They sat, they meditated, they sat by rivers, they were in nature, and they dedicated their entire existence to discovering the secrets of life. And it turns out that the human being is wired to be able to do that. But when we direct our attention outwardly all the time, it's very easy to miss a lot of things. So I think that's part of the problem with, you know, the blessing and the curse, you could say, of modern life and even modern science, is that until it gets to the truth, it can lead down a lot of roads that are problematic, and that we see that a lot in modern medicine also.
And why I love Ayurveda and traditional Chinese medicine, I kind of put them together because they work on very similar, they're different in how they address certain things and the herbs and food, but they have a similar way of understanding our connection to nature and bringing ourselves back into balance. But it's going back to those laws of nature that we really do not have an understanding of in our Western society. And, you know, we are really just trying to put out fires all the time rather than understanding how do you truly create harmony within oneself and balance within oneself. We don't have any real tradition that teaches us how to do that, so we are basically schooled by, you know, the latest drug ad, you know, and the latest food cravings that we may be getting. And as we know, the theories of health and the food pyramid changes all the time in our culture because we really are afloat. We're not anchored to any wisdom at all, truly, and
exactly.
the deepest wisdom, right? So with your vast experience, what are some of the key precepts that we are missing that we need to know about in order to create a foundation of health? I know that's a big question.
Well, That's a great question. The first thing that comes to mind, and I think it partly answers your question, is first getting some of the basic concepts that these ancient seers, you know, how they saw things from what the perspective that they saw things. And in Ayurveda, for instance, there are considered to be two causes of disease. There's the original cause, and there's the original cause. And there's a word that they use for the original cause of disease, which is called pragyaparad. And it's a big word, but you break it up into two words, which is prag or pragya, and then aparad. And what that really means is, an aparad means when we offend or go against something, when we offend something or go against it. And pragya means knowledge or wisdom. So they have described the original cause of disease to be when we go against or when we offend our own innate intelligence, when we offend our own wisdom, when we offend our own knowing, our own experience. So that's the root, and it's very, very interesting because it assumes from the start that we actually have wisdom, that we actually have knowing, that we have common sense, that we really know, you know, we do have a knowing that's there, but when we offend it, and when we offend it enough times, we lose connection with it. So part of health is to reconnect to our innate intelligence, and there's a lot of different ways to do that. One of the obstacles to that is the second, or you could say the other cause of disease, which is called ama, which means toxin. And toxins can come in a lot of different areas. As you know, it can be food-related toxins, it can be air-related toxins, it can be all kinds of environmental toxins, but it can also be emotional toxins, it can be psychological, mental, even you could call it spiritual toxins. And so toxins can interfere with our innate common sense wisdom and our capacity to connect to ourselves as the instrument that we are, the capacity and the potentiality of who we are as living beings. So those toxins interfere with that, and then there's this sort of cycle between more toxins, more pragyaparad causes more toxins, and, you know, and the cycle goes on. So the first thing really, in one sense, is to, and that's why I've incorporated cleansing, for instance, into my practice, is because let's get rid of some of the toxins, physical, mental, emotional toxins, as much as possible. At least enough so the windshield is clear and you can start to see more clearly. And then we can start tuning into what things am I doing? What types of ways am I offending myself, offending my own well-being, knowingly or unknowingly? So that's really the foundation. And there's lots of beautiful ways of doing that. There's not one way of doing that. But if you know, practitioners and people come from that orientation, and that's one of the things I love about Ayurveda and Chinese medicine. It's so much common sense. There's a lot of big fancy words, but it's really a lot of common sense, and it comes down to these basic principles that can be applied in different ways. I mean, even, you know, learning about our genetics can be applied in that way. You know, there's a science can be used in that way, in that context also. So we don't always have to just do things how they did it thousands and thousands of years ago, but we can apply what we know now, but using the same principles. That's kind of how I think about it.
And I love that definition as offending your innate wisdom, because the more we move away from our innate wisdom, which keeps us in harmony, you know, one definition of disease or illness is chaos in the body. You have chaos going on energetically because of stress or exposure to toxins or poor nutrition. Negative thinking is going to create a chaotic energy, and the body cannot function healthily in chaos. The goal of health is to restore harmony again. And you know, and I think it's important, and this is where Ayurveda, even in Chinese medicine, which I've worked a lot with, is understanding what that means to restore harmony. What are the things that we are doing, not just food, but all the other facets of our life that is having a direct impact on how our body functions.
Right. Exactly. Exactly. And, you know, Chinese medicine and Ayurveda broadens the perspective of who we are as people, too. You know, it's in the sort of simplistic Western model of health, it's still very, very chemical oriented. And it's sort of, let's do anything we can chemically to rid ourselves, or to create an effect, or to rid ourselves of a symptom. And it's as if we are just a bag of chemicals, and having different interactions. And if we can manipulate those chemicals somehow, then we don't have to suffer certain symptoms. It's, you know, as complex as, you know, drugs and medicine are, and once the approach tends to be very, very symptomatic oriented, and it doesn't honor who we are as very incredible, you know, human beings, all animals, but I mean human beings, we are amazing, amazing creatures with amazing potential, physically, mentally, emotionally, spiritually, intellectually. I mean, it's just vast. So the beautiful thing about Chinese medicine and Ayurveda is that it tends to recognize that first and honors that as part of the whole healing process. So it will bring in the importance of emotional well-being, like you mentioned, and healthy thinking, but also even the more spiritual dimension or the intuitive dimension. That's sort of a given in Ayurveda. It's not seen as exceptional. It's seen that every human being, that's part of being human. And as we cultivate different qualities and let go of those things that don't serve those qualities, then health emerges more successfully also. So it's a multidimensional approach to well-being.
So what do we need to know, Jonathan, that we can bring more awareness based on those ancient and wise principles and understanding of what creates more harmony? What are some of the basic things that we can learn about that we can incorporate? You know, maybe start with just understanding seasons or how we eat, digestion. That's so fundamental that most of us get wrong in our Western culture.
Yeah, I mean, it is always good to start simple, and to be pretty basic. You know, you can. And here's the other thing: when you do what's pretty close to being what's best for your body, then that affects the mind and affects you emotionally and your ability to digest your life and live your life, and vice versa. You know, in Ayurveda, it said the root cause of emotional imbalances is undigested experiences. And so in Ayurveda, everything's looked at, in one sense, one lens is it's all about digestion. So are you digesting your food well? Are you digesting your experiences well? Are you, in other words, when you have an experience, do you take it in, assimilate it, learn from something from it, and let it go and move on to the next experience? I mean, that's what we're meant to do. But when there's a wound, when there's, of course, some of these situations are, you know, I mean, things can happen to children that the child doesn't, quote, deserve it, then they end up storing some kind of emotional trauma in the body. So that's something that they have to figure out, or later in life, you could say, digest that experience. And that could be through some kind of healing or therapy or something like that. So all those things are important for healing, physically, mentally, and emotionally. So physical healing will, eating well, we'll start to remove some blocks. And, you know, we know the example of, well, I eat sugar to numb out, or I do this to numb out. And what are we numbing out? Sometimes we're just simply numbing out an undigested emotional experience. And if we stop numbing out, we might be able to move through that experience so much more effectively. I mean, if I have clients that are doing a lot of therapy, I always recommend that they try to eat as clean as they can. They don't have to be perfect, but reduce the sugar, reduce the alcohol, eliminate the wheat. And because they're going to be so much more clear when they're doing the emotional work, and they're going to go through that so much quicker than if they're all jacked up on sugar and coffee and bread and cookies, and they go into therapy. You know, half the therapy session is just getting centered from, you know, all the buzzing and the distractions that are going on in the body. So eating clean, eating whole foods as much as possible is so, so important. And as maybe I'm sure a lot of your listeners know about the importance of the frequency of food itself. I mean, I had a client today, for instance, who sort of revealed to me that she had a candy issue. but she wasn't. Wasn't
a candy
quite ready.
Issue. I love that.
A candy issue. Yeah, I mean, she's got a company, and they have bowls of candy all over the place, and you know, she's by the end of the day, she's eaten, you know, 20, 30 pieces of candy, and we had a nice talk about it, and she wasn't quite ready to let go of it. I said, okay, well, your next job is to upgrade your candy, so go to the health food store and get some, rather than eating some milk chocolate that's produced by some massive company and they put all kinds of crap in it, go get some nice organic, you know, raw organic chocolate and, you know, and use that instead. And, you know, she really liked that idea, so she developed a little strategy. So for her, it's going to be a gradual thing. For some other people, it's a dive into a program or something and really, you know, nip some things in the bud. But diet is super, super important. And the beautiful thing about Ayurveda is that there's sort of the foundational things about diet, but then you can individualize it based on the person's body type or dosha. And so you can refine it so that it's not the same diet for everybody, but it's, you know, one person is going to have a little bit, do a little better with more fat. One person, maybe some people that actually do quite well with a low-fat diet. Some people need a little more density. Some people need a little more lightness in their diet, or some people do need more protein than others. So there's ways to look at that also based on the principles of Ayurveda.
So maybe that's something we can just jump into a little bit more, talk about the different doshas and just describe them, see if people can relate to what dosha they may be, which may be useful if people are, you know, if people listening want to kind of tweak their diet more appropriately for their type.
Sure. Yeah, so, I mean, should I talk about what each dosha is a little bit? Want me to just
I think that would be a good thing, yeah.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, doshas, let's see if I can to sum it up pretty, you know, pretty quickly, because there's so much that could be said. However, dosha, the word, it's basically, most people think of the word dosha as body type. And that is kind of what it is. The word dosha actually means fault tendency or dis-ease tendency. It means fault. Dosha means fault. And what that means is that we all have, based on our, what we call constitution, or the, and our constitution is based on the combination and amounts of the elements that are in our body. So, and there's five elements, earth, water, fire, air, and then the fifth one's called ether or space. And every one of us is made up of those five elements, and some of us might have more earth, and more earth would be more density in the body. Some people might have more air, which would be an air is lighter, or like an airy person might be thinner and wiry like that. And some people might be more fiery, and that can affect the physical structure as well, the temperament. So we all have this thing called dosha. And again, it's based on the combination of the five elements, and there's going to be physical characteristics, and there's going to be mental, emotional characteristics as well that go along with the doshas. So let's take a vata. A vata, there's three doshas, vata, pitta, and kapha. And you can be a combination. You can be a vata pitta. You can be a vata kapha. And that's something that, you know, that you can identify with a practitioner generally. There are some, you know, good tests online, but it's always good to be with somebody and to go over that with you. But an airy person or a vata person, and what it basically means is you're a person who has a lot of air in your constitution, which generally means thin, wiry, and air element is related to the nervous system. And so an airy person or a vata person has both the blessing and the challenge of having a sensitive nervous system. So they could be very excitable on the one hand, very enthusiastic, very hopeful, very creative, with lots of ideas, but on the other hand, they may lack grounding, regularity, steadiness, centeredness, those types of qualities. So in Ayurveda, what we're looking at is we're looking at lifestyle practices that can balance that out. And we're looking at dietary practices that can balance that out. So generally, vatas do better with nice warm spices, lots of ginger, heavier foods, root vegetables. In traditional Ayurveda, the vatas would be considered to do better with dairy. Now, modern dairy has a lot of issues, but because of the heaviness of dairy. they would typically do better with a little bit more fat because of the heaviness of fat. And the exercises of a Vata would be slow yoga, swimming, exercise that has flow to it rather than jerky, fast movements. You know, people used to do a lot of aerobics. Like aerobics would not be good for Vata because it's very fast moving, so the Vatas need to calm the nervous system down. So that's an example of an air person. Then we have a fire person, and they tend to have a lot of heat in the body, and they tend to perspire easily. They tend to be quite intense, like a pure fire person, or pitta, it's called. They can be very intense. They can be actually, they tend to be very intelligent. They love to be organized. They like to make lists. They like to be in control. And they tend to have a strong digestion, but because they can be so intense, and they can be the workaholics of the world, and they can be very good leaders, but sometimes they put too much pressure on themselves and they never stop. So for the balance for a pitta person is they need to schedule in their calendar some time to chill out, because if they don't, then they'll never chill out. They'll just keep going. I have a couple of pitta clients. It's really interesting. And this guy has it down. He really has it down. He has scheduled in his life days that he just takes off and chills out because he knows he has to do that. And pitta has to be careful of too much oily food. What happens when you put oil on fire? It makes it burn stronger. So for them, watching the spices, watching the oily foods, your greasy foods aren't gonna do so well. Certain fruits are gonna, like green grapes for pitta is not so good. They're very heating. But red grapes are actually okay for pitta. They don't do well with, their digestion tends to be strong, but they can tend towards acid reflux because of all the heat in their body. So they need to typically eat cooling foods. For them, in the, you know, summer foods, lots of, they do the best, by the way, with more raw foods. Like a Vata air person does not typically do well with raw. But a pitta, because of their strong digestion and their heat, they can do quite well with a lot more raw veggies. You know, even for some of them in the winter, they can tolerate that. And then we have kapha. These are just some, you know, basic tips. We have kapha, which is the earth and the water. And these are the body types that tend to have thicker bones, bigger structure, more muscle. They tend to gain weight much more easily. I have some, you know, I've had some clients, they would say something like, you know, I look at, you know, a piece of cake and I gain a pound. You know, they tend to be slow moving. Kaphas by nature are generous, they're kind, they're slow moving, they're the best huggers on the planet, but they can also be very stubborn. They can be very resistant. They can be very stuck in their ways. And when the kapha is out of balance, they don't want to exercise. They'd much rather, you know, lie on their couch and visualize exercising rather than actually doing it. So for a kapha, literally doing the opposite of getting out there and doing something really sort of intermittent exercising, sort of intense exercise is really good for kapha because it breaks through that resistance in the body. They also, of all the types, they really need to avoid sugar and dairy. Kaphas can live the longest of everybody because they have the best structure. But if they eat too much sugar, if they eat too much dairy, if they eat too many bad fats, then they can really get into trouble. So eating clean for them is really important, and not overdoing with the carbs is really important for the kaphas. So that's just an example. There's a lot more that we can say about the different types. But and we are a combination. You know, so that's where it gets a little bit subtle. But one thing that I always like to remind people is the animals that are related. So the Vata is the monkey, the Pitta is the tiger, and the elephant is the kapha. And the temperaments of that can be like that too.
Yeah, you know, when you're describing the Vata, I know people, they're, you know, they're thin, they're wiry, they're high energy. Mm-hmm. You know, very very creative. Their minds are going a million miles an hour. but they can easily be pushed out of balance. Their nervous system is mm-hmm. so sensitive that if they're mm-hmm. overdoing it, they just wipe themselves out or become vulnerable
exactly.
to, you know, flu or something. Yeah, it just
yeah, that's really
yeah,
true.
It's so fascinating. The other thing that I find really interesting with these more traditional approaches is understanding the relationship between seasons and the food that we need to support us through those various seasons, which is such an unusual concept for our Western world, especially these days, where you can get a mm-hmm. pineapple in the middle of winter, right? And
right.
So, you know, if you're living up in, you know, in Canada, you can get pineapple, which
right.
does not grow in Canada. Doesn't grow any other than Florida, maybe. I don't know where else pineapple
is. Right, right.
But that's such an important principle that we have lost in our. We never really had it.
Right.
I don't think so. I don't know. If we did, it was lost a long time ago. But
right.
That's really important to understand. Can you elaborate a little bit about that principle, John?
Sure, absolutely. And it's a really it is really important. And like you said, it's even more challenging these days when you can get anything, anytime, anywhere, pretty much. But yes, so each season has different you could say adds different types of stressors or challenges on the system. So, and each season is said to predominate in a dosha. Remember, dosha means fault. So, for instance, the summer, part of summer is what's called pitta. It's heat. So the heat of summer can aggravate the heat in the body. So in the summer, we're going to want to eat less heat-producing foods in the body. One of the things that I really, really like to emphasize is the importance of in the spring, and here's another thing that both Ayurveda and Chinese medicine really acknowledge is that the season also correlates with an organ system. So the spring, for instance, correlates with the liver and the gallbladder. And then an organ also correlates with an emotion. So the emotion of the liver is anger. But it's not just anger in a very simplistic way. The Chinese describe it as the assertion of the self. So in the spring, and it metaphors nature, so just like the little seedlings under the ground in the winter, the earth is frozen, the seedlings have fallen on the ground in the fall, and now they're waiting to push themselves up through the soil. That's an assertion of the self. And sometimes when we're protecting ourselves or another person, that's what anger is. We're asserting, you know, we're taking our space. So that's the energy of spring. When we come out of winter, which is a very internal energy, we're meant to eat heavier, denser root vegetables. Heavier foods to nourish and keep us warm in the winter. But in the spring, the energy starts shifting. The energy starts rising. It's described the winter, the energy is the most internal, and then the energy starts gradually rising again. And there's a certain point in the spring where we really just want to expand our energy, just like that seedling is pushing up through the soil. And the spring is the best time to take the burden off the body. And that's why in Ayurveda recommends spring as being the best time to cleanse, really. And that means removing the burdens from the body, because then it gives the chance for the body to take anything that has been stored in the winter, even toxins that have been stored, because the body doesn't like to detoxify a whole lot in the winter, to do that during the spring. So, and it's kind of interesting, because what grows in the spring, as we, at least in the mid-later part of spring, are dandelions and dandelion greens, which are amazing for the liver. And the greens start coming up, and those greens are so healthy for the liver. And Ayurveda recommends that, you know, the different body types benefit from more or less fat like that. But there's a general principle that in the spring, we're actually meant to eat less fat, because by doing that, we end up and eating bitter veggies and leaves. Because when we do that, it stimulates our body's own ability to go after its own stored fat. And by doing that also, we detoxify and we release toxins. So the spring is a wonderful time to cleanse. And I found that sometimes people making that transition from winter to spring, they can be kind of sluggish or depressed. And part of that's because they haven't gone from that internal energy of winter and they haven't transitioned to that rising energy of spring, and they're sort of stuck in the middle. And one of the best ways to break through that is by starting to eat really clean. I also tell my patients that, you know, they like to drink quite a bit of wine or whatever, and some of them, maybe they struggle with it, or some of them they like to regulate it. And I tell them, if you're going to really regulate it, then the spring is the time to not drink alcohol. Like, completely take a break from the alcohol, cleanse out the liver, support your system, reset, and then, you know, then a little bit here or there is not going to be too harmful, you know, relatively speaking, but you really need that spring as that opportunity to do that. And then we go through summer, and if you do that in the spring, what happens is that your appetite in the summer will be much less. If we don't cleanse or take a break in the spring, we're going to continue our heavy eating into the spring. We're not going to feel that great in the winter. I mean, sorry, in the summer. We're going to still feel sluggish and heavy, even in the summer. And maybe by mid-summer, we're finally coming out of it. But summer is really the time to have a good time. It's the time to have fun, but we should eat light. We won't need to eat too heavily if we've cleansed in the spring. Then we can enjoy in the summer, you know, be social, get out there. But we can eat nice and clean. And that is the season, really. For those of you that do like fruit, that would be a time to eat a little bit more fruit, would be in the summer. And then as we come out of summer, and you can eat more raw food in the summer, obviously, and as we come out of the summer, the energy starts to descend a bit, and you just like the trees start pulling in their energy, and when that happens, the leaves fall off, the body starts pulling in again, and that's when we want to start going toward those heavier roots and veggies again. In the fall season, which is also a Vata season, which means it's a really important time to take care of ourselves energetically. It's a great time to refocus on your spiritual or your yoga or your meditation, because it can be that transition from summer to fall can also be very disturbing in a way for a lot of people. A lot of people feel sad in the fall. They feel almost like the summer's gone, the grief of the end of summer. And really taking good care in the fall is really important.
Yeah, that's great. So, you know, we have New Year's. January is a time when people, you know, are going to clean up after the holidays, and everyone is promoting their cleansing programs. But it actually isn't a good idea to be doing a detoxification program in the middle of winter.
Correct.
Is it?
Correct. You know, it's funny. I do a cleanse in the winter, but I call it the recovery cleanse. I don't recommend a heavy duty cleanse. I just recommend coming off all the crapola that we do. And for some people, you know what I mean? It's not really a deep cleanse. It's just, okay, let's pull back from the sugar, the dairy, the alcohol. And it just gives an opportunity for people to reset, but it is not meant to be a time of heavy cleansing, that's for sure.
And I really cringe when I see a lot of the cleansing programs that are, you know, doing juices in the wintertime.
Yes, exactly.
So do you want to comment on why that is not a really good idea?
Yeah, I mean, like I said before, the body is not designed. The body, naturally, the body doesn't. The body holds on. The body's, I mean, that's where we were talking initially, where we have this amazing innate intelligence, and it's both sort of conscious intelligence, but it's also just the innate intelligence of the body itself. And the body does not like to let go of toxins in the winter. I mean, it obviously lets go of some toxins, but it's not designed to cleanse in the winter. And when we're doing juices, you're not giving the body the kind of nutrition that the body really wants in the wintertime. It wants deeper level nutrition and some density to it. And the juicing tends to make the body very cold and dry in the winter, and it can actually put people into a state of depletion in the wintertime. So it's just not optimal at all. Most people feel weak, they feel tired, and it can also make people more vulnerable to, because it's a time of viruses and colds and all kinds of things. So people, once if they get cold and weak, then it's a perfect storm for, sort of suffering from a virus as well.
So, thanks for
it's
that.
It's just not the time. It's just not the natural time to do it.
Yeah, it's like not understanding the cycles that the body goes through, so be in harmony with them. And we're in winter now, so we can talk about winter. I mean, that's where you want to build the furnace, right? You want to stoke
right.
up the furnace.
Exactly.
You want the warmth, the immune system to be functioning. You want the restorative energy to be there. And that's why it's a time of, stews and soups and, like you said, heavier foods, more protein, more fats, because that's what generates warmth in the body. And that's what we need in the wintertime.
Exactly. Yeah, we need that warmth. Because, it will become depleted in other ways if we don't do that. And that's what's, that's where the part of the beauty of the common sense of Ayurveda is: cleanse in the spring and cleanse in the fall. Those are the two seasons that are recommended, not in the winter and actually not in the summer. In the winter we accumulate, and the summer we accumulate. Even though we sweat a lot in the summer, we're actually accumulating. Because of the heat, it actually penetrates, goes deep into the tissues. So we may actually accumulate some toxins in the summer, and we accumulate in the winter also. So the energy is going inward in both of those seasons, and then it's meant to come out in both the fall and the spring. But if, we have, I'm just using the cleanse as an example, but I've got to see over the years, it's really been a beautiful thing where people go through the process maybe once or twice a year, and they've really seen the beauty of it just, and it doesn't have to be my cleanse, going through a healing, a resetting and a really cleaning up your act for a few weeks can be an amazing reset. And to see it happen seasonally, and the wisdom of Ayurveda is like, just do it once or twice a year, and that's an inherent part of your healing process. And eating according to the seasons is an inherent part of the healing process. It's a very natural thing.
That's great, Jonathan. So in the time we have left, why don't you talk about your book? Because it's quite a tome, actually. You put a lot, you have a lot of information in there. All I can say is good on you, because it took a lot of work to put that book together. So why don't we talk a little bit about your book and about the programs that you do, because your programs are also online, if I am correct, right?
Yes, they are, yeah. Okay, sure. Yeah, I'll say a little bit about that. So, the cleanse, we started about 22 years ago. And a friend of mine, Dr. Kevin Gregg, and myself were just talking about what we used to call our difficult patients. And we came up with the idea that maybe if we put a group of people together and really focused on making dietary changes and lifestyle changes, we'd get some good results, because there's nothing like the frustration of a practitioner of making suggestions and the person comes back next week and, they've barely made any shifts, and you just keep doing the same thing again and again, and they keep paying you money and they keep not feeling better, and that's not very fun. So it's so much easier when you have a real clear program or plan to go through to make some changes. So we started having groups, and then we started working with people individually. And we just saw that when people really put attention on detoxing, but when we say detox, we used to call it the total body cleanse. Now we call it the total life cleanse, because we're able to really, just like we've been talking you know, today about how we are a multidimensional person, we would bring in these other aspects. And so that's what the cleanse is. It's a dietary lifestyle reset. And so that's what really happens. And people have just, it always blows my mind, you know, that when you give the body and the mind and the spirit a chance to do some healing, then, amazing things can happen. Even miracles happen when we give the body a chance, when we give ourselves a chance. So the book contains a lot of information, basic information about detoxification and the issues of modern life. And then I bring in a lot of wisdom from Chinese medicine and from Ayurveda and really try to integrate all of that. And I think most people have told me that it's, although there's a lot of information, I worked really hard at writing it in a really natural way that appeals to people's common sense and sort of modern perspectives on life. So without watering it down, making it not overly technical. So that's the book and the cleanse. You can go to totallifecleanse.com, and I have a few different options. You can, join as a group. You can do things individually on your own. You can just get the book. I have videos that I've, about 30 different videos that help you go through the cleanse. And I'm always here also to help support people when they have questions. So yeah, it's a great program. And one of the things that I've actually developed more faith in humanity by seeing people go through cleanses, because, there's always somebody that you kind of, that they kind of think, gosh, I wonder if they can actually do this. And then they show me that they can do it. And the human spirit can be really strong when they put their attention on doing something that's beneficial. And once we kick in that innate intelligence, that kind of takes over. When you take the mud off the windshield and people start seeing more clearly, then it's like something kicks in and it becomes actually quite easy and I would say even enjoyable going through these programs. People like it. They actually enjoy it. So thanks for letting me share about that.
Oh, you're welcome. Well, it's like turning on the light again in a person's
yes,
eyes,
exactly.
In their
exactly.
spirit, right? That's been kind of lost, clouded over level
right.
of muck and stuff. And I like that metaphor, cleaning the mud off the windshield so the light comes out.
Yep.
Yeah, you do a great program. You're very dedicated to what you do, Jonathan. You're really knowledgeable. And if people are near Concord, Massachusetts, they can come see you at the healingessencecenter.com. Or pick up the book, learn more about it at totallifecleanse.com and get more empowered by getting really good information. And you've put a tremendous amount of work into your program, into your book. So I trust people go check it out, Total Life Cleanse, or get more information at the healingessencecenter.com. So, Jonathan, thank you
awesome.
So much. It's been a pleasure
thank
having you.
Thank you, Dr. Show.
Yeah, it's such a pleasure.
Appreciate
so,
it so much.
Absolutely. It's been delightful. And to all of you listening, thank you for this conversation with Jonathan Glass. And until next time, I just want you to have a week filled with love, peace, and harmony. Bye for now.